one of our own on WNR.
The sound of Waterford. WLR. WLR.
In this ninth programme from the second series of One of Our Own, Mary Lincoln is interviewed by Catherine Foley about her life as a potter in the village of Ardmore. Roseanne Foley recorded and edited the series, which is produced by Uncorsacock.
This was made with funding from Commissioner na Man and the television licence fee.
Mary Lincoln is a potter of renown, based in her beautiful studio in the coastal village of Ardmore in West County Waterford. But she grew up in the Midlands, and she began by telling me about her childhood there.
I'm a Kildare woman, I'm from Bridget country. Yeah, but I've always been coming to Ardmore. It was when we were kids, it was our holiday place to go to. And my mother was in Ardmore every summer of her whole life, and it was her holiday place as well. So when I got the opportunity then to come and live there, it was like a dream come true. We grew up on the plains of the Curragh, so it was a wonderful place to grow up. And they always say if somebody is from the Curragh, they either have something to do with sheep farming, army, or horses. They're your only three options if you live there.
Mary's father was Aubrey Brabazon, a famous champion jockey and trainer.
My dad was a jockey, and he was a very good jockey. And then he went on after that to train horses.
What was his name, would we know?
His name was an unusual name. His name was Aubrey Brabazon. Yeah. And he was Vincent O'Brien's, for anyone who knows anything about racing, he was Vincent O'Brien's first jockey. And his great claim to fame was he rode a horse called Cottage Rake. And Cottage Rake won the Cheltenham Gold Cup 3 years in a row with my dad on board. So that was the great excitement. The late 40s, early 50s, he was a champion jockey in Ireland in those days. It's an absolute passion. I had it up till about the age of 14. I was mad into horses. I had a pony that I just absolutely loved. I pestered my parents for, I'd say, 4 years to get a pony, and I won in the end. And I had this gorgeous pony called Tinkerbell, who was basically the boldest pony in Ireland, I'd say, but I loved her. And when I outgrew the pony, I think that's when my interest in horses just waned. But my dad and my brother Dick is very involved in horses still, and it goes back generations.
Mary spoke to me about her mother, Ethna Dwyer, who loved to swim and who passed this passion on to her daughter.
She was a physically very fit woman. Yeah, she loved swimming. And that's where I inherited her absolute love of the water. And she taught us all to swim when we were very young.
Did she go riding? Was she involved?
Yeah, she loved riding, but I don't remember her riding at all. As a young woman, she rode a lot. And she rode in a point-to-point, a famous point to point, and she won the point to point, and there was this cup at home. And we used to always brag that my mother won every race she ever went in, but she only ever went in one. My father said he absolutely banned her from riding after that. He said his nerves couldn't take it.
Really?
Yeah. Well, point to pointing is, it's pretty brutal.
Ferocious.
Yeah, pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mary attended national school in Kildare, and then she went to secondary school at the Holy Child Convent in Dublin. But it turns out that the young Mary was to learn about creativity from her father.
Did you have any teachers who nurtured your artistic leanings, or what do you remember from your school days?
My memory of school days was I was mad into sport, and I do think the happiest day of my life was the day I left school. People often say the school days are the happiest days of your life. They weren't mine. School was fine, but I thought, let me out of here, because, I mean, when I was in primary school, let me out of here to ride my pony. And I just thought it was a terrible waste of time. I could have been at home having such fun. And secondary school was a thing to be got through. I had very good friends in secondary school, okay. I went to boarding school in Killiney in Dublin. And yeah, and it was a lovely school, really nice school, but I would prefer to have been elsewhere.
Out in the ocean, swimming, I suppose.
Yeah, so. Being outdoors, yeah. I would have loved. And it was quite a sporty school, and I loved that aspect of it. I played a lot of tennis and hockey and basketball and anything that was going, basically. Dad being a jockey, he broke every bone in his body. And so periodically he'd have to take to the bed, recovering from illnesses. And we always loved when he had an injury because he stayed at home and he was accessible to us. But one of the things he used to do was he used to make these amazing little figurines out of clay or plasticine or anything. He used to do them in the bed.
So while he was recuperating, he'd be using his hands.
Yeah. And I can remember being absolutely fascinated by this. And I'd say if the truth were known, that was probably the first sparking of, you know, sculpting clay and that. So, I mean, there were a number of years then when I didn't do anything.
After second level, Mary attended Sign Hill in South County Dublin.
I went and I trained in special education I went to Sign Hill, and I studied Montessori teaching. And then in my final year, I did special ed.
Mary met Richard Lincoln in Ardmore when she was there on holidays.
Well, I actually met him in Ardmore. He was a fisherman in Ardmore at the time. And
When you were a teenager, wasn't it?
I was a teenager, I was very young. He was baby snatching. And, and I met him top of the pier steps.
Really romantic.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the height of the whole salmon season thing. And he put himself through engineering college by fishing. And after college, I worked in the inner city in Dublin.
You were teaching?
I was teaching, yeah. And in this wonderful little school, it was really ahead of its time. It was a daycare centre. It was to try and keep children out of residential care.
And so were there children with special needs?
They were children with special needs, mostly sort of emotional needs. It was a very rough part of the city, but it was a great community.
And I suppose when you say rough, you mean poor, very disadvantaged, was it?
But there was a huge change while I was there, because it was disadvantaged and it was poor, but it had a great, great spirit, and the neighbours looked out for each other and that kind of thing. But in the latter years, it was basically the start of the whole heroin problem in Dublin. And before my very eyes, I could just see the whole place changing. Mm. And it became very, very difficult. When I was expecting my first baby, I kind of moved out of that. It was very stressful.
So and you also were kind of burnt out in
I was burnt out. And also when I started teaching down there in this wonderful place, I really felt I was going to change the world. And as the time moved on and my children all started appearing in the children's court, I realised, no, I'm not actually changing very much around here.
A chance meeting with Bernadette Madden, an artist living next door to Mary, was to change the course of her life.
An opportunity came. I had this wonderful next door neighbour when I lived in Dublin called Bernadette Madden, who was a great, great artist.
And still is, isn't it?
And still is, and we're still very good friends. But Bernadette said to me, Mary, I'm looking for a cleaning woman. Do you know anyone who would be interested? And I said, well, maybe. And she said, and the pay is good. And she was very generous. She paid very well. And I said, well, I'd be happy to do it, because the pay that she was offering was actually a lot more than I was earning as a teacher. And I was really ready for a change.
Paintings by Bernadette Madden and other artwork in her house inspired Mary.
But I started working for Bernadette as her cleaning lady, and she was very particular, let me tell you.
Really?
She was, but she had a house full of really, really beautiful abstract art.
Her own work or a mix?
No, collection of work from other artists. And it was really strange because as time went on, I really began to love them. And also Bernadette was a great woman for having parties and things. So she didn't, we were next door neighbours, so she invited me into the parties. So I got to know all these artists whose work I was dusting diligently. Yes. And one of the women who were at those parties was a woman called Hester Scott, who was a great ceramic and still is a great ceramic artist. And she was head of ceramics in Dunleary School of Art at the time. I said, could I go down someday to the pottery? And she said, oh yeah, come on down. She said, I could do with an assistant. So in I went, as in the back door of the art college. I learnt an awful lot from Hester. I was actually only there for a year, but I learnt an awful lot in theory because my part of the deal was I assisted her, but then I would be able to sit in on all the classes. So I was in with the postgrad students, the beginners, the whole lot. And so I learned an awful lot in theory. If you were doing an apprenticeship with a potter, it was a 7-year apprenticeship, so it was quite long. And I had intended doing the 7 years with Hester, and but it turned out that that was cut short because we got offered work down south. And my husband Dick and I had decided whichever of us could get work first, we'd move to Ardmore.
In 1977, Mary moved back to Ardmore with her husband Dick and their 1-year-old baby Katie.
It was the time when the Kinsale gas field, the gas had just been discovered in Kinsale. He was one of the first engineers that worked on that project. Yeah.
Mary's family of three settled into life in Ardmore. And even though Mary was busy with her new life, her love of pottery never went away.
And the arrangement was that when we moved to Ardmore, that I would get a kiln and a wheel. And so I did. So I mean, I hadn't a clue how to make a pot. I knew in theory, but in practice, I had to actually.
And did you find, Mary, that you loved it? Did you take to it immediately?
I absolutely took to it straight away. I just, the magic of it really appealed to me. And every time I touch clay, something different happens. Like, you would never get to the end of it. So that excited me hugely, and still does, I have to say.
In 1983, Mary opened a small shop and set up her potter's wheel in there. The business started small, but from the beginning, she was successful selling her own pottery.
I never intended to have a shop at all. I just wanted to make pots. It's when I discovered that actually buying the clay and the glazes and all the equipment and that, like, that you needed a little bit of money for that. So that was how I have started selling my pots, was just to get the money for the next...
To cover your costs.
To cover my costs and also to get the next bag of glaze or brushes or oxides or whatever would be needed. And then when I opened it to the public, it was just a little kind of a back shed, and it was freezing cold, I can remember, but that's another story. And I needed then to fill the spaces when people were coming in. So that's how I got interested in other people's work. And I started housing other potters' work and different craftspeople. And it just grew very, very gradually. Ardmore had a tourist footfall. So I thought, yeah, well, that helped greatly. It meant I never had to wholesale my pots. Yeah. I was unlike a lot of my friends.
When winter came, the tourists would leave and go home, and Mary would close up shop. But when the spring came around, she'd open her doors again.
Yeah, it was always exciting. It was sort of like a fresh broom. The place would get a good sweep out and dusting down and that. But it's quite different now. We have trade all year round now, which is great because Ardmore used to close up for the winter. And yeah, it doesn't anymore. And the thing is, my daughter Katie has taken over the business now, so I'm supposedly retired. But in actual fact, I'm in a studio of my own up at the back of the pottery, and I can work there on my own all day long. And
are you still working away, Mary?
I'm working every single day of the week. Yeah.
How many hours would you sit at that wheel in a day?
I don't necessarily work on my wheel a lot anymore. It's very demanding if you keep doing it. It's mostly hand building work that I do now, and I'm also doing quite detailed pattern painting, which I'm absolutely loving.
Yeah.
So that's what I do, and then I trot down below with all my goods and chattels, and Katie sells them. So it's good fun.
You must have been delighted when she stepped in to take over the running of the shop and the stocking of it and all of that, that as an artist, that pressure was taken off you.
It was absolutely wonderful. So, when I decided I wanted to retire, Katie said, "Mum, I'd love to take over that business." And I said, "What?" I was mystified, because she had been working. She had gone to Dunleary School of Art as well, and she had studied film. But one of the things that is new is that it came about during COVID, in fact, is that Katie had the opportunity to open an online shop. And that's a very important part of the business now.
Over the years, Mary, like 40 years, that span of time, you must have customers who come back again and again.
I've got the most incredibly loyal customers. They're just wonderful. They come back when there's birthdays or Christmas time or whatever.
Mary's daughter, Sarah, is also an artist, following in her mother's footsteps.
Your other daughter, Sarah, Mary.
Sarah's the younger girl, and she worked with me over the years. From the time she was quite young, she worked with me in the shop.
So she's you trained her as a potter?
And then, she's trained as a potter. Yeah, she did a sort of an official year as an apprenticeship with me. So she's very capable of making pots now, and she has a little range that she sells in the shop as well.
Since opening, the reputation of Mary's pottery has spread far and wide. Her shop continues to stock the best of Irish handmade goods, and Mary remains passionate today about what is sold there.
And over the years, you've won awards, you know, best craft shop. You know, what's the special ingredient, do you think, apart from yourself, Mary, being there? What do you think it is?
I always just sold stuff that I liked myself.
And it was all Irish made. That was something.
From the word go and to today, it's just all Irish crafts. Well, I again think that just the quality, the quality of the work that's coming out now. Yeah. You see, a lot of the craftspeople now are training through art college, and they've a very good sense of design and that, which wasn't necessarily the case when I started first. It was just a different sort of scene then. So the quality of the work is really good, and I've always been pretty particular. And stuff has to sit beside its neighbour in the shop too. It could all end up looking like a dog's dinner. It could get out of hand if you said yes to everybody. The thing is that you're just spoiled for choice. There are artists in every nook and cranny of the country now. I mean, I could fill a space twice the size of our present shop with good quality Irish. And I'm mystified by people not seeing that, and like importing pieces, other pieces. I just don't get it, because there's such an abundance of really great work out there.
Mary told me how her signature design of blue on white came about by accident.
Those original designs that I developed, they've stood the test of time, and people really like them, and it's still being made there in the pottery. And the very first sort of discovery, our sort of signature pieces are blue and white spongeware. And we use sea sponges because the colour of the pottery is very much reflected in the sea and our surroundings. And the very first blue came about by a complete mistake. I opened my kiln one morning and there was this beautiful white bowl that I'd made, and there was a wonderful blue splash of colour across it. And I thought, it looked just like ink on blotting paper. And I thought, where did that come from? It's beautiful. And I had to sort of retrace my steps, and I figured out that I had had cobalt, which produces the beautiful blue, on the end of a paintbrush. And I had obviously done a sort of a twist around. The kiln was open. The chances of this happening was just so bizarre. The kiln was open, and it obviously the flash of this colour went onto the pristine white pot. And so I worked on that. Afterwards, I sort of recreated it and embellished it and whatever. And that's how the blue and white sponge ware, which is our sort of signature pieces now. And the other one then was the copper glaze, which again, we do very little of now.
Is that the green, the jade green?
The green, yes. I used to call it aqua because it was just like the sea in May. And that was a recipe that I got from these wonderful old potters in Youghal, which I've been very influenced by, I have to say. There was a great, great tradition of pottery making in Youghal. And it went back to, apparently, the Phoenicians used to come to Youghal to collect clay. And because that was the quality, and still it's still there, the seams of wonderful clay, which excites me hugely to think that there's a sort of a history of it there. But there were still two of the original, some what I would call traditional Youghal potters, Tony Breslin and Mr. O'Callaghan. And they were both very, very, I was a complete beginner. And they were very generous with their knowledge to me, and they gave me recipes. And that green,
that beautiful
copper,
jade
that
green,
beautiful one is a recipe that I got from Tony Breslin.
And where do you get the clay, Mary? You said they clay, came from Venice to get the clay in Youghal. So where do you get yours?
Well, I use a little bit of local clay now. After a storm or something, I would go down on the beach, and there would be sort of lumps of this original potter's clay down on the beaches, and I bring that home. But that's very, very time consuming and special. I just make special pieces with that clay, because a lot, you have to sieve it, and there's nothing added, nothing at all, and it is a beautiful, beautiful clay. It just, when you fire it, it goes a lovely toasty brown colour. So yeah, that's all exciting.
You've never been tempted to have a school of pottery or open a factory or anything. It's always been just you there at your wheel in the back of the shop when people go in. Now that has changed. I know you say you're in a different space and Katie is in charge of the shop. But did you ever think about that?
I thought about it very briefly and then put it promptly out of my mind. Yeah, it just so happened that suited my way of, and also it was nice to be in direct contact with the customers coming in, and and they liked seeing the process too.
But you know that line from the poem, "Who is the potter, pray, and who the pot?" I think it's from the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. So when you're in bed at night out, do you become sort of obsessed nearly with the pots and the clay and the crafting them, or, you know, are they in your head the whole time?
They are.
Really?
The thing that I'm completely obsessed with at the moment is pattern. And I see patterns everywhere. And that's what I'm doing at the moment, is painting patterns onto pots.
Do you think about God, and do you think about that side of life a lot?
I would say my God would be Mother Earth. I have to say that organized religion doesn't interest me at all, unfortunately.
But you're very much in tune with nature. I mean, do you go swimming every day?
I do.
Do you ever miss a day, Mary?
I would never miss a day. Now, obviously, if I was sick or that, but you tend not to get sick if you're dipping yourself in the ocean every day.
Goat Island, is that where
you
go?
Yeah, that's where I go swimming in Goat Island every day. And yeah, I just absolutely love it. It's like brushing my teeth in
and
the morning.
And have you always done that now? There's a craze, there's a new fad for wild swimming, but how far back does it go?
Yeah, no, I suppose I started about 10, 15 years ago going down to Goat Island on my own. With people say, you're not going swimming on your own, are you? And I say, no, I'm not on my own. My dog came with me. And then my little granddaughter, Eliza, used to come with me. And she'd sit on the beach on my towel waiting for me to come back in. And yeah, it's interesting. As I say, my mum was a great swimmer and she had a love of the water. So it was instilled in us. But of all the kids, and there's seven in my family, and I'd say I'm the one that's most passionate about the water.
Yeah. Did it become a sort of almost a meditative thing?
Well, it's completely meditative what I'm doing at the moment. It's like one big meditation from early morning till late at night. The fact that I'm into this pattern business now, it just becomes part of you.
Mary, thanks again.
Thank you, Catherine. Thank you so much.
This was made with funding from Commissioner Man and the television license fee.